All right, here we are. We're live. Welcome back. Welcome back.
Live.
Welcome back to the. That's right. We're live. Shout out to my brother Jamal in the building with me. We're in the break room. The break room is a platform that I run and go by where I feel like sometimes in life we got to stop, pump the brakes, and see where we're going, and then and see where we came from. We got Jamal back in the building. What's going on, Jamal? You there, brother? I might have lost you. Oh, there you go. There you go. You there?
Can you? Yeah, I'm here, man.
I'm with you.
I don't know if it's at night. Can you hear me now?
I hear you, brother. I'm here. I know we got technical difficulties. It's all good. Talk to me.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess where we going to start off at?
Well, you know, it's been a while.
You still 24
there?
It's like
hours.
You're frozen
it's been
a little.
A while, okay, 24 yep. hours. If you haven't heard, yesterday, I'm still here. I'm still here, brother. You here? I'm here, brother. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I can hear you.
All right. It's been a while. All right, cool. Well, I was telling the audience that it's been a wild 24 hours. It's been wild. It's been pandemonium in the media right now. And the reason is because yesterday, I don't remember the time of the day. I want to say it was late afternoon. I want to say I was home by then. But late afternoon yesterday, I want to say in Utah, I don't know what college campus that was. So pardon me, audience. Pardon me. I don't know what college campus that was. But Charlie Kirk.
Was it Utah renowned college, though?
I don't know if it was a college, but I know it was in Utah. But yesterday, a renowned conservative pundit, opinion, a theorist, some would say a polarizing figure, and I'm being put in lightly there, Charlie Kirk. He's renowned in the manosphere. I believe he has his own show, or had his own show. I don't know if it's called the Charlie Kirk Show.
Yeah, he did. I think he had it. He had it with Candace Owens, I believe.
At one point.
He was with Candace Owens.
Right. I remember they were partners at one point. Unfortunately for him and his family, yesterday he was shot down. He was murdered. The Utah Valley.
That was sad.
The Utah Valley University. Look, I'm looking right now as we speak. That the authorities are still searching for the shooter. I believe they claim to have photographs of the alleged suspect, a white male in a black shirt at the time. But yes, Charlie Kirk was gunned down yesterday at the Utah Valley University. Like I said, we live in a time, just to give a backdrop to Charlie Kirk, we live in a time in the last couple of years that, you know, there's been this big manosphere of certain very strong opinionated gentlemen who are on the internet or on the web creating their own platforms and spewing their raw thoughts. And Charlie was known as a polarizing figure because he had polarizing views about race, sexuality, ideology, crime, America, the Second Amendment, all in between. The man who one time spoke ill of Dr. King. I mean, he definitely said something to the effect of he discredited Dr. King as not being an important figure in American history. He said that he wishes that affirmative action. What's 1964? I'm losing my vocabulary here, Jamal. When black folks got their rights. Pardon me.
The First Amendment.
Pretty much, yeah.
The
Civil Rights Quote. He's discredited the Civil Rights Act. He said that the
Civil Rights Act, 1964 Act.
He's quoted as saying we made a huge mistake when we passed the Civil Rights Act in the 1960s. He says the Civil Rights Act of 1964 is the reason why white men aren't safe anymore in this country. In fact, 2 or 3 days ago, before he passed away, before he was murdered, he was making bold claims on his show and online about how, you know, white men should be fearful of black men. But here we
are
today.
He's also said about black pilots. Right. He's also, you know, if he says he sees a black pilot, he hopes that they have a certification, or he hopes it's not DEI.
Right. He was a big anti-DEI. He was big on the DEI, on the DEI witch hunt that was a fame the last 2-3 years ago. And I can go on and on about things that I may have disagree with upon him on. With that being said, he was still a man who was gunned down in public. And I want to reiterate that because I want to say this about Charlie Kirk. What I want to say about Charlie Kirk is, you know, we need to live in a nation where we can disagree, even if it's vile, divisive rhetoric that is poor in delivery, poor in manifestation and in thought, and lacks critical thinking, but it still means something to have proper discourse and to honor those like Dr. King who preached, you know, nonviolence and working through discourse through words and not fisticuffs. It's important we continue to honor that legacy, no matter who's the victim. So I take no pleasure in someone who I diametrically disagreed upon everything with, in Charlie Kirk being murdered like that. If I'm not mistaken, I'm hearing that his family was around. Charlie Kirk, I'm hearing his family was around that day of the scene at the college. I understand he was a father of two young children, baby boy and a toddler young lady. So, you know, to them, I offer nothing but condolences. He has a wife. To his wife, I offer nothing but condolences. I think it's sad
that... Exactly, feel the same way.
Yeah, I think it's sad when we as a nation pick up a gun to dispute our issues, whether it's Chicago, whether it's LA, whether it's the Utah University, no matter where we are in the world, I feel like we need to do better as human beings resolving our issues, which is why, sidebar, I'm a big proponent of the boxing gym. I feel if we can't figure things out in discourse, if we can't figure it out in discourse, all right, you grab a glove, I grab a glove, we meet at the gym. You know, we got to have
box
it out.
It out. That's it.
Yeah, let's box
this
it
whole
out.
Gun like, stuff, man, I just don't understand, yo. Like, I don't get it. I don't know why we can't. What's up with going to shoot the fist-to-fist combat? I don't understand, you know. I don't get that, man. But everybody straight to the gun.
Don't get me wrong, Jamal. Don't get me wrong, brother, when I say this. I do believe it's important that Black folks know how to operate firearms, know how to...
Yeah, of course. I own a gun, so...
Right. I believe it's important that Black folks in particular know how to operate firearms, know how to recognize the importance of firearms, and recognize how it can be used to protect my family. There's importance in that. What I'll also say about Charlie Kirk in particular is, Jamal, I'll say this. The energy you put out there in the universe, it can come back. It can reverberate. Can, especially if it's polarizing energy, where it could be interpreted as more disruptive than positive energy or connectivity. It can reverberate into bad juju in the air for you. It can bring upon it can bring upon demons, maybe. Yeah. It can bring upon foul people out there who have no intent of debating with you.
100%.
Executing you. You know, not for nothing, Jamal, I'll end with this before I pass it to you. You know, when I first heard or read that he was shot, I thought it was something where it was up close, where it was I thought it was up close, whether a handgun, a switch, something of that nature, at one of these debates that he'll do or Ben Crowder does or a lot of conservative pundits do. They go to these universities and just, you know, go tit for tat with students. I thought it was an up close encounter, but when I saw a first video of the shooting, it was from a wide, further back view from another building, yards away, like almost a football field away. And when that video let the shot go off, the people in that video on top of a rooftop of a building, they turned to their right, which let me know, this was a long scope situation. This was a long scope situation. Now, when someone has the gall, when someone has the precision, when someone has the patience to sit down somewhere and use a sniper rifle to exterminate someone else, that took planning and thought. That took planning. That took thought. That took desire. And I wonder what it was that person going through or is going through. What were they thinking to say, I have to do this, you know? And if you figure that out, we can figure out, you can figure that out for a lot of people about where they are in life as far as depression, as far as angst. But I've said to say this, and I'll pass it to you. His legacy, I'm sure will be intact for some. Because I don't know if you noticed, Jamal, they're already talking about giving a presidential medal of freedom.
Like a martyr.
Yeah, yeah. They're going to martyr him up already.
Yeah.
A presidential medal of freedom. They already dropped flags for him. And this this is a podcaster. This is not somebody who served in the Gulf. Yeah, that's all. But they're going to honor him in various ways. I think Yankee Stadium last night, you know, a moment of silence. I know last night they did one, moment of silence last night.
Gotcha.
But, you know, he'll be honored in various ways by our government, which is, you know, headed by 45. And this is the world we live in. This is the country we live in. What do you say to all that, Jay?
So, I mean, to unpack all of that, again, you know, I'm going to go to a little bit of a spiritual level. Just like I said, you know, you go, when you go around, you know, and I don't just want to say attack, but when you go to like these HBCU and you go to these college campuses and you talk about, you know, well, the reason why Black folks got a lot of problems is because of the gangs in the communities and you guys are with the gun violence and things like that and the drugs and X, Y, and Z. Then you go on another campus and you spew that again and you just keep, you know, saying all these little harmful things and hurtful things without the right numbers. You understand what I'm saying? You're entitled to your own opinion. And that's fine. You know, and the kids were debating them back. And it was, you know, it's cool to see that, you know, to like get, all right, it's a little debate, you know, but it's like, I would rather see somebody more equipped, like somebody of his age in that bracket to, you know, combat with him. But when you keep going to these campuses and you're doing that, you know, a lot of that stuff comes back on you. And again, it's like you said before, you invite these demons into your atmosphere. You understand what I'm saying? So now when I go like that, when I say all that, and I'm saying this to say this, you were gunned down by a white man. You understand what I'm saying? And what is that? And what does that set? What under present tone does that set? You understand what I'm saying? It's almost like, you know, you sent up here, you want to talk about how Black people got all these issues, but then again, you get gunned down by somebody that looks like you. Whether he'd be transsexual, whether he'd be whatever the case may be, I wouldn't care. But the problem is, the issue is, what we have is, again, it's America. America has a gun problem, and America has a mental illness problem that has not yet addressed, and it's like they don't want to fix it. It's like you're putting a Band-Aid on the issue when you have to really do the work to fix the issue. America is like a cake. And if you bite into that cake, you'll see how rotten it is inside. You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
From the outside looking in, it looks like this nice, magical civilization utopia. But when you bite inside that motherfucker, in the lack of better words, it is rotten to the core. And that's just the God honest the truth. I mean, I don't know any other way else to say it. And, you know, a lot of people may not like what I had, how I say it, but it's the truth. We have a problem. And like I said before, our government is not trying to fix the issue. You know what I'm saying? That's the problem. You know, like I said, there's a lot of things that they just don't want to. Everything is swept under the rug. You have a gun problem. We have more guns than people in this country. Homeless rate is at an all-time high. Job unemployment is through the roof. You go in the grocery stores, you look, you know what I'm saying? Then every time you turn around, you know, you got this one talking about the president of the United States is sitting up here talking about, well, transsexual is this, transsexual is that. Like, if they are the big problem, like, are they this some type of disease or something? And when you keep doing that, it's just like, oh, listen, if these people can't get to you, well, guess what? We can get to somebody like him. He ain't protected like you. And like I said before, and I don't agree with the shooting. I totally disagree with it. I don't like I think that's cowardly. Like, I don't like, that's not how you handle that. That's not how, you know, you understand what I'm saying? That's not how you handle that. Like, again, my heart goes out to his kids and the family. But again, when you sign up for something like that, unfortunately, man, you're inviting those demons into your realm. A lot of people ain't going to take that. You know, a lot of, like I said before, I had this discussion with a few people. I had this discussion with a manager. I had this discussion. I'm just keep telling people, like, y'all don't understand the psychology of this, and you don't understand the spiritual realm of this. When you start talking that rhetoric and you start spewing all that, and like I said before, we're not saying you sit up here saying this person should die, that person should die. But when you start attacking groups, yo, my man, you asking for, you know what I'm saying? You just keep criticizing and criticizing and criticizing. It's like, all right, now you asking for trouble. Mm-hmm. Because not everybody's going to be able to take it like how we can take it. You understand what I mean? Certain people are just like, you know what? Nah, I got a few screws loose. I don't like what you're saying. You could even see it if you just look around, like even through Facebook and whatnot, I got people that just didn't really give, like, I had one kid, you know, over here was just like, nah, fuck him. I don't care. He's a bigot, blah, 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 blah. Mind you, this was a white kid saying that. Mm. I'm just like, I said, I hear you, but at the end of the day, I just want to feel like we shouldn't handle the situation like that. you know, he kept ranting and he said, nah, fuck that. I don't care, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay. But again, it's like I said before, we have a problem. Okay, everybody just likes to point the finger at black folks. Nah, man, it's y'all too. It's that community too.
Yeah.
Like, come on, you're not addressing the issues that's going on in your backyard. You're not. How can we fight a war, right? How can we fight a war externally when you can't even solve the problem internally?
Yeah, I digress.
You solve the problem inside the country first, you ain't never going to beat Xi Jinping and all and Putin and all.
Mm-hmm. I hear you, brother. Oh, I lost you, brother. I lost you. I lost my brother Jamal real quick. I'm sure he'll get back in a second. But I agree with him. I agree with what he's saying. You know, the energy you put out there, the energy you put out to the world, it can come back to you tenfold. It can come back to you in various ways. It can come back to you. We hope it comes back only in rhetoric and response and only comes back in just talk. But it seems like sometimes, you know, people out there, like he said, has screws loose. And you can't account for screws loose. You know, how do you combat someone who has a few screws loose when they want to do whatever they want to make their hurt feel felt? Because hurt people, you know? And I don't know if some of these Richard Spencer, Manosphere type people have truly recognized. I don't know. I feel like we are at a crossroads as a nation. I feel like we need to figure out who we are. You know, I want to say Eddie Glaude. I remember a few years ago on MSNBC, Eddie Glaude. I forgot what the situation was, but Eddie Glaude, he's a journalist and a pundit on MSNBC. And it was back in 2019 or 2016. I think it was 2019.
Yep.
Some incident had happened. Hey, what's going on? Are you back? You back? Sorry, we had lost you for a second. There you go.
I'm back.
You were preaching. I was telling the audience just now while you were gone that, you know, I remember a few years ago in 2019, Eddie Glaude, he's a pundit for MSNBC. And back in 2019, in August, I don't know what even happened that month or that day, but in any event, he was a pundit on MSNBC in reaction about some event that happened. I don't know if it was a shooting. I don't know what it was. But, you know, he made the point where he says, you know, we should stop saying when will things change or we're better than this. He was trying to say, this is who we are.
Right.
This is us. You know, this is us. And when I say this is us, I like to say, you know, whenever a relationship starts in sin, it usually ends in sin. So if you bag a dude or if you bag a chick off of somebody else, you know what I'm saying? Like it was an adulterous situation. That your situation might end in drama in itself because it didn't start out right. You know what I'm saying? It didn't start out with a clean break, a clean handshake.
Yo,
no one was deceived or hurt.
Damn
or
it, man.
Embarrassed or whatnot. It was clean. Where, you know, here in America, we were built. We were built like this. We were built in dysfunction. We were built in terror. We were built in violence, or through violence, I should say. We were built through subjugation, through exploitation. For that reason, we still haven't healed through a lot of our drama and trauma. We still have some of that old 1776, you know, angst of just lead with violence, lead with hurt, lead with rampage. And we're not better than this. We're not better than what we export as far as terror. And yesterday was an example of that. With that being said, you know, I wonder where we go from here as a nation. I wonder what happens next. I wonder what we do from here on out. I'm a little disheartened by everything. You know, it's terrible. It's terrible. You know, like I said, that brute violence was unnecessary. Unnecessary. But here we are. This is our nation. This is America. You know, Donald Glover, Childish Gambino, he had that song, This Is America. And, you know, he was so poignant then. You know, we are, as a nation, fucked up, messed up. You know, we're not well. And where do we go from here? I don't know. I got my brother Jamal has technical difficulties, so bear with me with him. But I want to say that, to any liberal, progressive, leftist, or any person in period, because I've seen crazy rhetoric all across the board. To anybody on the left who can be possibly praising this death, you need to relax. Don't invite those demons into your life. don't invite those, that lack of compassion into your heart. Because no matter how tough we think we are, we can't wear or fashion hurt. It'll always eat us up before we wear it. So you're better off not gravitating towards that. It's not worth it. But yeah, I'm curious to see what happens next. Shout out to my boy, John. John, years ago, I want to say pre-pandemic, you know, he had told me one time, he had said, yo, I think we're going to have a civil war. And I brushed it off like, civil war? Yeah, right. But now more than ever, I'm like, but, you know, I feel we're that much more as a nation apart than we are together. And I think for that reason. And on top of that, we're seeing the uptick in political violence, if you will. Mind you, violence overall and crime overall is down. With Baltimore, Chicago, New York, crime is down. But some of these incidents of political polarization and fighting and infighting, it's on the rise. It gets zany. And I could see us being a nation where we continue to see moments like this. To that I say good luck to us as a nation. Moving on, as Jamal enters back soon, God willing, I want to also touch upon this whole Young Thug situation. You know, this whole Young Thug situation, man, we look crazy as a group of people, as a hip hop community, as a Black community, as a musical community. We look crazy with this whole Young Thug situation. What situation is that? Well, if you've been, you know, not watching the news or hip hop news, you know, a few months ago, Young Thug was released from jail, from prison. And in that time, now recently, we have seen just these leaked recordings come out again. And these recordings have illustrated some of his personal thoughts. But before I get into those thoughts and the recordings, I'm going to have Jamal come back on in a second. But sorry about that. I had a brain fart. But in the meantime, yeah. I would say it's a very polarized. Here's Jamal. What's up, brother? You back?
Yeah, man. Yo, been just having a really rough night over here. I'm trying to switch to the other Wi-Fi. It's not
brother
even
Jamal
letting me.
Jamal has a little technical difficulty on his end.
Yeah. So, all right. Where were we at? Your picture's still loading. Jesus. I don't know if this is starting to act up at night. Can you hear me? My God, man. This is crazy, bro. Fuck, man.
No problem. No problem. I hear you, brother. I hear you. Okay. So when we left off, we were talking about pretty much, you know, just the effects of, like you said, you brought up the idea of just gun control and mental health concerns,
right,
as far as violence and
correct. I'm a gun owner. You know what
better.
I mean? Like I said, I own firearms. I'm all for the firearms. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I'm all for the fist-to-fist combat as well. But like at the end of the day, we have an issue in America and it needs to be addressed. I'm not going to change my stance on that, you know, and everybody can be naive about it. You understand what I'm saying? This is just not, you know, it's just not about Charlie Kirk, but we just had school shootings. You understand what
Absolutely.
I'm saying? We had a back-to-back, like, come on now. You understand what I'm saying? We had a few of them, you know, but everybody
Absolutely.
Just want to talk about Chicago. Everybody just want to talk about this. Yeah, again, because you have a gun problem. And you choose not to really address it. Then everybody
right.
want to come up on these theories on, well, how are you supposed to stop it? You know, what are people supposed to do with, like, when people are breaking into gun stores and things like that? Well, guess what? Then these firearms shouldn't be kept in the storm. The gun stores that I go through, you have to order them. They have the displays mm-hmm. out, but those are useless. So if anybody was to break in that store, they have no act. Even if they took those firearms, it wouldn't have done them any uses because at the end of the day, they're dummy arm. They're dummy guns. You understand
right.
what I'm saying? I'm not saying every gun store is like that, but most gun stores should be like that, period. You know what I mean?
No, I know what you mean, and I concur. I agree with you, and I feel like I was saying earlier while you were out, you had technical difficulties. I was saying earlier that, you know, Eddie Glaude, he had said one time during an event that happened back in 2019 in August.
Yeah.
Some event happened where he was saying basically, you know, he was pretty much saying, and I'll paraphrase, how he was responding to the notion that, you know, we're better than this as a nation. We're better than this.
Right.
And, but this is us. We were built through this. We were built as a nation through rampage, terror, violence, subjugation, brute force, disregard for life. We've been encouraged as an American culture to be this way from 1776 before then. So I can't say that we are better than this as a nation. We are this. We are a nation that is filled with rage, filled with hot blood temperament, with little room for disregard. We destabilize other governments. We've killed our own presidents. You know what I'm saying? Like, we are a nation that is just so engulfed in violence. So, you know, how do we fix that? I can't say. Well, talk to me. The notion that, you know, this is who we are from jump. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, exactly. Right. And again, when a civilization is built on death and slavery and X, Y, and Z, you know, it usually doesn't fare well. You understand what I'm saying? Look how you're operating. You're operating off a kind of a stain a little bit. You understand what I'm saying? It's just absolutely. Nothing wasn't like, it wasn't pure. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And you know, some people agree, like, hey, listen, if it wasn't for this, if it wasn't for that, we wouldn't have this now. Well, that, you know, you could say that about a different group, but you can't say that for about all of us, because it wasn't fair for all of us. You understand what I'm saying? A lot of your ancestors didn't have to travel over here in chains. If you really want to get deep into this, you know what I'm saying? I can understand if everybody came over here peacefully and, you know, they everybody had to fight or whatever for land or for spots and stuff. Okay, cool. But that wasn't the case for everybody, period. You understand what I'm saying? Right. And that's why I say that. That's the issue. You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
And it's just like, and a lot of people just don't see it that way. And people that don't look like us, that don't see it that way neither. And I'm okay with that. You know what I'm saying? Because I don't argue with people. I don't do that anymore. I'm not, if you don't understand what I'm trying to say, you don't understand where I'm coming from. If you don't understand the history of this country, I can't have this conversation with you, is because you just go want to see it one way. And you know what? That's fine. But at the end of the day, America has a problem. And a lot of people like to live in denial. I'm not living in denial. I see it every day. I do my research. I read, I study, like, you know what I mean? You understand you get where I'm coming from?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that's the problem. I think we've lost a way. You know what I'm saying? When your school system is not doing as well as it used to, that notes that you have an issue.
Right.
You want to take this out of the schools. You want to do this. You want to do that. Blah, say, blah. Come on, man. What are we doing? What are we doing? You're setting yourself up for failure.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Speaking of schools, speaking of education, mm-hmm. you know, Young Thug in the past few weeks have shown us how we need to educate our brothers and sisters more. And, you know, this is a gentleman who I guess for, you know, years for now has been a polarizing artist out of Atlanta with his whole quirky, unique style and aesthetics and whatnot.
Yep.
But he went through a situation recently through the courts of a RICO case in Georgia. And now he's home where he's been battling, as of lately, some rhetoric from his own mouth through potential jail phone calls, which come to question, you know, a man's psyche when he's locked down, what he'll say, what he'll do, what quote unquote codes he will make or break, what kind of trust he'll break. And it's been a topic of chatter to say, or to inquire or wonder, you know, what is a man's code when they are either A, going through distress, going through potential incarceration, which I've never been in. I have no personal history of incarceration, no experience of incarceration. But I think this whole Young Thug jail phone call situation, and most importantly, makes you wonder, you know, what do we value from the leaders of our community, the men, as far as what should our kids be looking up to? What should we be mocking? What should we be cultivating? And what should we be leaving in the past? And to give you a quick opinion on my end, I feel like the Young Thug situation on my end kind of reveals that, you know, we have raised a lot of children in the last 30 plus years to only identify or mainly identify with street lore, with street ethics, street codes, street morality. And we've glamorized this, and not just in the Black and Brown community, because we have a whole, the 90s, growing up in the 90s, we grew up idolizing, well, not me personally, but we grew up as society, you know, idolizing Italian mafia street movies. You know, we as a culture, as an American culture, we gravitate towards these rag to riches street stories, even though they all usually end bad, whether it's jail or in prison. And yep. now we have a guy like Young Thug, who is a polarizing popular rapper who has these, all these jailhouse calls where he's, you know, nitpicking at people. He's calling people out by their name. He is probably disrespecting privacies of others. And you're seeing a man not even take his prison, potential prison sentence seriously by speaking on his actual case versus, you know, gossiping.
Yep, exactly.
It makes me wonder, Where are our men, our street men, where are they going? What are their goals? What are they living for? And how do we make sure they stay on the narrow path? What do you get from all this hoopla, all this circus for the last few weeks?
With all this stuff with Young Thug? So,
I'm not a fan of his music, per se. Just let you know that. I'm not a fan of his music.
I'm not going to lie. I thought his last album was the one that J. Cole produced. Oh, I forgot his name. Two something.
I don't remember the name, but I did hear J. Cole produce an album of his.
So much fun. So much fun when, what's his name? J. Cole produced that album. I thought that was his best album. Hands down, that's his best album.
No kidding.
I thought it was, like I said, I liked a couple of hits off of there, especially before my flag games. I played a few of his music, got me hyped for the game or whatever the case may be. I followed the case, you understand? He's not a dummy. He's really smart, believe it or not. But eventually, it's just like, and you know, when you started to really look into him, you know, he's a child of, like, he has 12 siblings, brothers and sisters. They're grow up in the hood. They didn't really have much, you understand? He grew up in that environment to where he had to survive. This is all what he knew. You know, say what you want about him. Call him gay, queer. I don't care about that. But, you know, how he got this whole organization started, how he did things. And like I said before, I don't condone the violence. I don't agree with a lot of the shit that he does. I don't, you know, his music was, but like I said, you know, so much fun. That album was, you know, when you listen to it, it was like, oh, okay. All right. Now we're getting somewhere. Because again, J. Cole helped produce that album and helped him out. You know what I mean? To get him to where he got to go. Up until he got caught up with this case, this RICO case, and the shit with him and Gunner. I like Gunner. I don't know if you're a big fan of Gunner, but listen, that kid is not bad.
Okay, I never sat with his music either. I never sat with it, really.
Yeah,
I hear good things.
Yeah, Gunner, like I said before, and even with the whole Gunner situation, the kid came out, they called him a rat or whatever the case may be, but what he did, he dropped an album. He kept it pushing. You know, I think with Thug, how Thug felt like he was all alone. You know what I mean? And I totally get it. You know what I'm saying? Because they felt like they were a family, you know. And on Banks' podcast, I don't know if you watched it with him, the Bank podcast.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah.
I saw a clip or two.
Yeah, yeah. They were talking about that, and that was heavy. And you know, I totally understood where Thug was. Thug felt alone, and he was vulnerable. This is what people got to understand. Thug is not like, y'all really think like, and this is why men are afraid to open up. Now we'll take it to a psychological level. He was afraid to open up. You understand what I'm saying? And when men do open up, they want to clown him and talk shit. Oh, he's this and he's that. Nah, he was vulnerable. He opened up. He said it. Like, yo, he wanted to cry. Like, he felt like there was nobody on his side. You know what I'm saying? And at the end of the day, I don't give a damn what you say. We could call it his enemies putting those phone calls out. We could call it this. But when somebody wants to destroy you, and I'm going to, like I said, I may be going to a little bit conspiracy theory here, but hear me out real quick.
Go for it.
How did those jail calls get out? And now everybody says, well, that's a lot of public record. You can get those. If people want to get those, that people have access to them. That's kind of weird. Why would you want access to them? Remember, he's under that whole thing with Drake. What's the record label? UMA or UMG? Something like that?
UMG.
If they want to get rid of you, they'll figure, listen, if you got a beef with people and they don't like how you're moving, they go figure out a way to hurt you.
Charlie Kirk.
Bingo. And that's what I'm trying to say. When you kind of make these enemies and you know what I mean, you're not equipped to battle that and you don't know what's really going on, because think about it, yo, all those, and like I said, who do you really snitch on? I heard he was saying something about his homeboy Pee Wee or something like that. Okay. What did he really say about him though? I don't really like, what did he like? Oh, and everybody's saying, oh, he snitched and blah, blah, blah. What did he really say? I don't really think he said anything. If anything, he fought that case dead head up. you got to show me some type of proof on where he snitched at. But people are saying, oh, he snitched. I'm just like, well, where? And again, this is not me just totally defending him. Like I said, he could have handled things a little bit better. But I hope he's trying to run the straight and narrow now to try to, you know what I'm saying? Rewrite those wrongs or whatever he did. But at the end of the day, listen, man, he's still young. I don't think he's that old. He's probably, early 30s, late 20s or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. But, you know, the kid, like I said, he's still a young man. I feel like, you know, I'm a proponent of, you know, second chances. You know, as long as you ain't kill, rape, or stab or do anything into that nature to a woman or to another person or a man at that, you know, I'm all for, you know, second chances, you know, and God gave him a second chance. You know, now it's all about, can he rewrite those wrongs? That's what I really want to see. But this whole thing with the whole gang culture, and the only reason why it's prevalent is because the music labels, they sell it to us. They say, hey, listen, we need to hear some pain. We need it. You know what time it is. That's why I said, and like I said, I love D1. I like what D1 does. You know, I'm not really big on his music. I listen to some of his tracks and things like that. Like I said, D1 can spit, you know, but also everybody can't be a D1. You know what I'm saying? A lot of these guys can't relate to him. You know, and I granted, I'm not saying D1, you know, didn't come from the hood or anything like that. But, you know, a lot of these guys are in pain and they don't know how to process it. So therefore, they process it through the music. And I'm not saying it's a good, you know what I'm saying? Look at DMX. DMX is a prime example. And I love DMX, but DMX was hurt. And I tell people how he was hurt. And not to take away from the thug situation or any other situation we're talking about. When that man gave that DMX them drugs, when that boy was 14 years old, he was hurt by that. To give him, to set him up like that and to drug him up like that and to do that, that would hurt any young man at an age like that. He cried when he stole that story because he felt like he trusted him. DMX didn't have a family. So what more did you expect from him? No one wasn't grabbing him and taking him in and things like that and trying to show him the way. That's the problem. We like to look down and chastise and judge and do all that. I'm not doing that because I know how hard it is. I'm from the hood. You live next to me, Mike. Come on. You already know what time it is.
I'm with you. I feel as a culture, as Black folks, it's important to always give each other grace because, you know, we're all we got.
Right.
You know?
That's it. Nobody ain't going to come save us.
So I understand there's been a lot of jokes thrown to a young thug about his situation, about, you know, just the embarrassment of certain phone calls being put out there. But like you said, it's like, well, what's the purpose of these calls that are coming out? Who are they serving? What are they serving? What's the goal here? And if it's just to denigrate and to mock young Black men or to get them to turn on each other, that's not where we need to be. You know, that's not where we need to be. So I hope that people recognize that, yeah, you can watch a circus. You can watch a circus and watch drama unfold. But we are a part of the circus and we don't take a step back and say, hey, we need to mediate. We need to help our brother. We need to encourage our brother to do well. We need to be a shining light on his pathway, not mock him with darkness. So 100%. I wish him all the luck in his next endeavors. I hope he's able to make positive moves and changes in his life and also show others that are younger than him that, you know, you can come out of jail and regroup, recalibrate yourself and be an inspiration to others. So I'm rooting for his 100%. Success. And I want to say, when I say I'm rooting for his success, I don't mean monetary. I think the success for him could be defined as just him turning a new leaf and inspiring others, you know?
Facts. I agree. Totally on the board with that.
So that's where I'm at with that.
That's what I want to see. I just think he was at a vulnerable moment. I truly think, you know.
No, you make a point.
You know, he felt like he was alone. You understand?
You make a point. Real quick. Today happens to be 9/11, September 11th, 2025. 24 years ago.
9/11 victims.
Right. Well, 9/11 victims.
Yeah.
24 years ago. What would you say... What does 9/11 mean to you, whether it's in the past, present, or future? What does 9/11 mean to you, and how does it resonate with you, if it even does?
I feel like when 9/11, you know, I was in high school when it happened. I was in the ninth grade. I would have sworn I saw you in the cafeteria that day, too, because we were Ramapo, because I was in the ninth grade. I think, was it ninth or 10th? I want to say that.
It had to be 10th. It had to be 10th, because I was in the 11th. And
Yeah, it was 10th. I was in the lunchroom.
When it popped off initially, when it first popped off, I actually was on a field trip to a World War II memorial area by RCC.
Got you.
And we saw fighter jets just flying low, whooshing over us. And we're like, what's going on? And then we came back to, we had to get rushed back to the school. And then lo and behold, you know, because back then, you know, unless you were balling, you didn't have a cellular phone. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, we didn't really have an idea of what was going on until we got back to school. And once things unfolded, we're like, oh, okay. This is different. I want to say about 9/11 that what I'll say is it's a terrible tragedy for all parties involved. And what I mean by that is the actual victims, whether they were on a plane, whether they were on the planes or whether they were in the towers or mm-hmm. in the Pentagon or in Pennsylvania. I want to say that the after effects of 9/11, the way it was used for us to enter into misdiagnosed enemies, misdiagnosed mm-hmm. wars, corrupt wars that led to random people in the Middle East who had nothing to do, whose country maybe had nothing to do with it, the victims of the, in their own neighborhoods. I think that was a casual, that those were, there were casualties as well. On 9/11, I feel like a lot of our homegrown members of the U.S. Army and military and those who served during that time in the Gulf War Part Two, and they gave their lives
mm-hmm.
in the spirit of avenging 9/11, even if it was, like I said, misguided or misdiagnosed with the quote unquote weapons of mass destruction. I feel like, and we still, through policy, whether it's the, what was the act called that Bush enacted that took away our liberties? There's an act that we went through the NSA. It's like a NSA, security. The Patriot Act.
Yeah, you know, it was the Patriot Act. Yep. Strengthening the tools required for like the for terrorism and stuff like that. It's called the Patriot Act. You're right.
The Patriot Act, which expanded, you know, the government's ability to monitor transactions, surveillance. You know, it really was a license to break into privacy of American citizens. You know, all these things reverberated after 9/11. So it's left a stain in our daily lives, especially as New York. But I want to say, more importantly, you know, I don't think we've learned from hurt people overseas who may have been the perpetrators of the attacks. And I think over the years, we've only fueled mm-hmm. more violence, fueled more angst towards America. I don't think we learned certain lessons that we should have learned from that. Lessons of being a leader and compassion and coming together and building with foreign entities togetherness and connectivity. I feel like we're still at odds with various people across the world that we marginalize and exploit, whether it's over oil or whatnot. And I don't think, in short, that we've learned much from 9/11. I don't think we learned much from 9/11. I mean, to this day, you know, when it comes to the healthcare system, from what I understand, you had 9/11 survivors who went down there initially as first responders who died of cancers because they were told to go down there initially, and then they weren't given the proper funding afterwards to combat certain diseases that they got in their lungs from inhaling all that debris. You know, we have failed a lot more than we've succeeded in the aftermath of 9/11. And I feel
Mike, mm-hmm. you just sweep it up under the rug. You don't really address the situation head on. I was in a gun class for the 9/11. What's his name? And I think his brother or somebody passed. And he was just saying, like, I think he has cancer from it. He said it. He says, mm-hmm. "Yeah, I got cancer." And that's where I was down there, man. And I'm just like, see, he's an example of what we're talking about. And he said it. He was just like, "Yo, I'm not getting any benefits from it." There's some of these guys are still waiting. Believe it or not.
Wow.
He was explaining all this for like lawsuits and certain things. I'm just like, after 20 something, he's like, "Yo, man," he said, "it's deeper than that."
Wow.
I was just, I was baffled. I was shocked. I was just like, "Yo, you're a firefighter." He said he went down there, you know, but it's a lot of that smoke and stuff that got in all of his lungs. He said it messed him up. And I think who, not wasn't his wife, but somebody had passed. I forgot. Somebody close to him, though. I don't know if it was his brother. He said, yeah, man. He said, first it was my brother, now it's me. I got the cancer from that, man. And wow. He said, they didn't take care of us properly. I was like, wow. Unbelievable, wow. Man. I'll never forget it, man.
Sad.
Yeah,
sad,
it
man.
Is.
Sad
it's
to
unfortunately,
hear that.
Man. Yep.
Sad to hear that.
My heart goes out
that.
To the 9/11 victims, man. That shit wasn't supposed to go down like that. I don't agree with that neither, you know? I thought that was wrong.
Yeah, I agree. So I'll end it with that. Like, you know, rest in peace to any 9/11 victim. My condolences to any family member that was affected by 9/11, whether here in the States or back in the Middle East, because
right.
that incident affected a lot of different people across the globe, and we're still
hell
reeling
yeah.
with the after effects of it. But let's move on and have a little fun here, because
mm-hmm.
I want to get into a sports conversation with you and get your idea on a few things. So last week on the podcast, Pablo Torre finds out, journalist Pablo Torre, he uncovered an alleged scheme with the LA Clippers.
I was looking into that.
Right, where pretty much Steve Ballmer, the CEO, allegedly through a shell company called Aspire,
yes.
was able to have investors in this company. And pretty much like this. The LA Clippers are being investigated by the NBA for alleged salary mm-hmm. cap circumvention related to Kawhi Leonard's endorsement yep. deal with Aspiration, a company that received a $50 million investment from owner Steve Ballmer and a no-show job endorsement deal worth $28 million was reportedly given to Leonard through Aspiration. Now the investigation is ongoing, and there could be potential penalties for the Clippers and Kawhi, and it could include fines, forfeited draft picks, or even voiding his contract. So in short, Pablo Torre, the journalist, uncovered is that through this shell company, Aspiration, Steve Ballmer allegedly paid Kawhi Leonard, his star player, $28 million under the table to circumvent the salary cap in the NBA. To that, what do you say, Jamal? To that, what do you think? As a sports fan,
I mean, as a sports fan, yo, I just look at it as this. That thing, they sick and tired of that whole salary cap, bro. They just trying to get around it somehow. You know what I'm saying? I just feel like just finding loopholes. That's how they look at it. I'm telling you. That's all. It's got to be that. What else can it possibly be? Because I'm just looking at it like, and when you read it, and just like, well, damn, they just trying to pull a fast one. I mean, but what sports team ain't ever did that before? I mean, you know, sure if we really look into this, like, you know, I felt like they found some type of loophole or whatever. I don't think they would have. Well, you know, I can't say that. I mean.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? It's just like, it's weird. I'm just like, damn, y'all, that's how y'all moving now? Like, and they ain't been good. Like, so it's it's crazy. It's some weird shit.
I have a few unpopular opinions about all this. First and foremost, I'll play devil's advocate. I would imagine maybe there's some owners out there or governors, what they call them, NBA governors of teams. I would imagine some of them are petty or upset because they feel like, hey, you found a way to circumvent the cap to keep the boy who on an open market, he probably would have been forced to go elsewhere or blah, blah, blah. This is what I'll say, unpopular opinion. First and foremost, I believe there should be a salary cap in the NBA.
Should be.
Right. And I think there shouldn't be a salary cap. I think it should be like baseball. Because baseball, you could pay a player however much you want to. If the LA Dodgers want to pay Ohtani $400 million, they mm-hmm. just do it, you know? So I feel like NBA should have that. And the reason why I feel that way is because, bear with me when I say this, I think either we're American or we're not. And what I mean by that is, I feel like in so many different parts of life, we'll say, this is America, freedoms, finance. As long as you won the game of Monopoly, you should do with your money as you please. As long as you...
Pretty much.
Yeah, as long as you got the money, you should be able to pay for what you want.
Right.
And there should be no restrictions. America. So that's how you feel. If that's how you feel, I feel like, hey, man, as Steve Ballmer found a way to pay his guy more, it is what it is. Like, he had to keep him somehow, some way. This is what it is. And I'll get even more pettier than you, more pettier and unpopular with this. Honestly, Jamal, I feel if you're black and your genetics were mutated through harsh slavery for your ancestors for years, for breeding purposes, to make the best slaves. You know, if you're 6'8", 6'9", today because of what your ancestors went through, so what if you get paid extra money? So what? You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like it is what it is. Like, yo,
it's what it
is. I'm sorry. I think black players are owed more money and more generational wealth than
they
begin with.
They put their body on the line.
I'm going to buy it on the line for show, for entertainment. And I shouldn't even be here. I should be 5'10", 6'1", maybe. But because y'all bred me for 400 years and trained my body to be something else, to be a quote-unquote, lack of a better word, a freak, I'm going to exploit this game. You know what I'm saying? And I feel I probably opinion, I feel like no institution should pocket watch legal black folks. You know what I'm saying? I feel like if black people are out there legally making money of their own talents, I feel like no institution should be pocket watching. So even though I appreciate journalism and I respect the craft of journalism and how it's important, there was a petty part of me that was like, "Damn, Pablo, you snitching?"
You know what I'm saying? I feel like he was. I mean, in a sense, he definitely was.
You know, Kawhi Leonard was a 16 year old kid in L.A., where his father was murdered at his own car wash station. People know that. Mm-hmm. His father was murdered. So if he wants to have $28 million extra, so be it. You know what I'm saying?
That shit wouldn't bother me one bit. Not a bit of mine, bro.
But that's my rant. That's my take. What do you think?
I think I agree with you. I wouldn't, you know, at the end of the day, it's just like, yo, he made it that far. Why the hell not?
Yeah.
Shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, listen, yo, somebody's got to pay something. You know, I went through all this. Like I said, how many years Kawhi Leonard been in the league? 10? Is it almost 10?
I'd say a little more than 10 because remember, in 2014, he won with the Spurs.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. He's over that. So he's about 12.
Yeah. Something like that. He's from the Spurs.
Yo, listen, man, get your money, bro.
Yeah,
if they can't figure it out, I don't know what else to say. I ain't hurting nobody. Like, shit, I ain't hurting nobody.
I hear that. Real quick, before we leave, because I got to leave soon. So before we leave, I know you're a boxing fan too. Yes. Give me a picks for this weekend. You know, big I fight. Like Canelo Crawford.
Okay. Yep.
Crawford, even though he's had one fight at 154, he was a career 147, 135 guy. You know, welterweight and junior welterweight.
100%.
So he's pretty much virtually jumping three weight classes to go to 168 super middleweight to fight the unified or really undisputed champion Saul Canelo Alvarez on Netflix this Saturday night. What are your thoughts? Who do you got? What's going on?
I like them both. I tell people this all the time, man. I love Canelo Alvarez, man. I love Crawford. So this is hard for me. I got to go for Crawford. I'm going for Crawford on this one. But at the end of the day, if Canelo wins, it wouldn't surprise me, you know, because, like, you know, this is his weight class. This is what he fights at. Understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
He's used to that. You know, he bangs at that weight class. I tell people, like, yo, and people act like, oh, Canelo ducks people. He does this. I said, Canelo has fought a lot of good fighters.
Yes,
and people don't talk about that. I'm just like, yo, I can't say that about him. But now he's going up against Bud Crawford. I like Bud, man. Bud is just different. Like, he's very, very technical. He's going to really look like to try to, take his time with this fight. You understand? Especially at that weight. You know, I'm dying to see how he is. I just really want to see, you know. But if this fight goes past six, I believe it's going to go all 12. It's going to come down to a decision. I like Crawford.
Okay, you got to go into a decision.
I got to go into a decision, man. I don't got to go into a knockout. Everybody got it to a knockout. But if that knockout happens, I wouldn't be, you know what I mean? It's just like, all right.
Yeah, wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised. Do I think Bud goes in there and destroys him? No,
I don't think so either.
Hell
no. Speaking of destroy, as an Errol Spence fan, I'm still hurting from like two, three summers ago. That man, was a,
I told people.
Errol, if you out there, man.
I was
man.
Telling y'all, man. Everybody was Earl Spitz, Earl Spitz. I'm just like, nah, y'all just don't know. Like, y'all haven't seen, like, Terrence Crawford gets busy.
The head, there's always a head and a heart bet.
Mm-hmm.
In my head, I knew Bud's going to win this. But in my heart, I was rooting for Spence. But in my heart, I was rooting for Spence. In my heart, I felt like, damn, man, we're not even gonna get the fight that we want because Spence post car crash is not the same. But
he's not.
You know, you can't cry over spilled milk. What happened, and Bud proved how he is the premier fighter of his generation. With that being said, he's going to 3-weight classes, like I said.
It's going to be hard, man. That's not going to be easy.
It's not going to be easy. It'll be the first time he's feeling a body shot at from a 168-pound person.
Mm-hmm.
How does he react to that? He struggled in his previous 154 fight for a little bit with Majumov.
Yeah.
Before he found his bearings. And I wonder how technically sound he will be Saturday night, because one thing about Bud, as amazing as he is as a pugilist, as a technician, he has a mean streak in him that sometimes he likes mixing it up and get into like a little firefight. So I'm just like, I hope he does. I wonder, will he get into that with a big old 175 pounder rehydrated tomorrow, you know, Saturday night, you know, or will he play it safe and just, you know, stick and move, you know, jab, body, you know, body work, move in and out, you know, be awkward with your style. I wonder. I don't know. I don't have a pick because conventional wisdom always tells you the good big man usually beats the good smaller man. But it's so special, you can't just write off the fight by size, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Especially that's why I'm kind of conflicted. I'm just going to watch the fight for what it is, but in the low, I'm kind of going for Crawford, you know? But just going to watch it for what it is, you know what I'm saying? It's just like I said, I like both fighters, man. I told people that from the jump, you know? But I amend him, you know what I'm saying? You got to respect him for doing that because not a lot of fighters is doing that.
No. Chasing greatness. Chasing legacy. Yeah.
Right, he chasing legacy. He even told him with the pay, he's not even getting paid. He getting, what, $10 million out of it? I think Canelo, he said he don't care about that. He said he just wants to chase greatness. I respect that, man. But again, it's like I said before, Bud's a good defensive fighter. Like, he knows how to defend himself in the ring. Like, his awareness is on point. You understand what I'm saying?
Right. I agree, which is why it's a hard pick-em fight because it's like, because even on the Canelo side, as great as Canelo is, as seasoned as he is, there's been performances lately where you're like, oh, is he taking the foot off the gas or is he really getting tired and worn?
Right.
But I feel like with this fight, I saw him sparring with the kid from Philly. I forgot his name. Boots Ennis. So
Boots 18 or something like that.
Boots Ennis.
Boots Ennis, yeah.
From Philly. And I saw he's taking the style of Bud seriously by sparring with Boots. So, you know, I want to see the game plans. I want to see who opens up first. I want to see what kind of fight we get. I'm inclined to agree with you that it might just go 12 rounds.
Yeah.
But like I said, I want to see what will Bud do if Canelo catches him with a nice clean shot.
I know.
Especially a counter shot.
Right, yeah.
You know, Bud is magic at times. You know?
Right.
You know, he's a demon too. So,
yeah.
He's like a magical demon. But bro, we'll see what happens Saturday night. We can't wait. It's on Netflix live. I want to say 9:00. It starts. And you know, be there, be square.
Yep.
I got to take off soon. So before we leave, anything you want to say, brother?
I just want to say, man, listen, you know, for the people out there, you know, keep your head on the swivel. Stay positive, be vigilant. And you know, just do some thinking, do some spiritual healing if you may, you know, read some books, and you know, do your research, you know, and again, like I said before, man, because things are getting rough. And I don't know how much of this wave is going to continue to go. I don't know what the upside is. You know, right now we're trending down. We're not trending up. I'm being a realist here. I'm not going to sit up here and be naive because I don't do that. At the end of the day, I'm going to give you the bad, but I'm also going to give you some solutions. You know what I'm saying? I say train, work out. You understand? Read. That's about it, man. You know,
I hear that,
those are the solutions. And save your money.
Yes, sir. and save your money. And I'm sure the next time we record again, we'll have that money talk.
Yes, we definitely do. I'm down for that one heavily.
All right.
And it's like I said, I would like to, before I go, I'd recommend this book. I know it's upside down, but it's You Deserve to Be Rich by Rashard Bial and Earn Your Leisure. I know you know who those guys are.
Absolutely. You deserve to be rich.
Yep. You deserve to be rich.
Awesome. All right, brother. Thank you for the recommendation, brother. Until next time.
All right, brother. We'll do it again later.
All right, bro. Be safe. Yep.
Don't close out of this, right?